So as Paul said, we are at the end of our series in 2 Corinthians, Broken Vessels. And I feel as though after I preached the message a couple of weeks ago about being jars of clay, I feel like God's been ministering to me about what that actually means, because I've just been so sick since that moment. And the whole family's been sick, actually. We were at the GP yesterday, and the poor doctor was having to hand out scripts left, right, and center to all of us. So we're all on antibiotics. It's very fun. But I'm feeling weak, like in my body. And we all are weak. We know that. We all are susceptible to bugs, to aging. You know, if I asked who felt weak this morning and asked for a show of hands, I'm sure I would get quite a lot. But here's the funny thing. We say we're weak. We know that that's part of our human experience, right? But we spend so much time and energy in our lives pretending that we are not. We spend so much energy and time in our lives putting up a front, trying to make it appear as though we've got it all together. We're all perfect. We're strong. It happens in virtually every interaction that we ever have in our lives. Somebody might ask you, it'll probably happen here after the service today. Somebody will ask you, how are you doing? You say, I'm good, I'm good. And if they ask, no, how are you really doing? I'm fine, really. I'm fine. I'm fine. I think as men in Australia are especially good at doing this. Very rarely will another Australian man ask another Australian man about their weaknesses or reveal their own weaknesses. We're just very good at covering it up. I think as I'm kind of learning more and more about what it means to be a pastor, I feel that it's very easy to, I guess, buy into the temptation of wanting to appear like you've got it all together, because that's what a pastor is, right? You don't want a pastor with issues. They're supposed to help you with their issues. But so, you know, I can sense that. I feel that. But it's simply not true. Pastors don't have it all together, sorry to say. Why do we feel the need to kind of cover up our weaknesses? Maybe we have this deep down desire to be a someone in society. Maybe we have a deep down desire to be idolized by other people, to keep up a reputation in all facets of our life, not just at work, but everywhere. It's like we're kidding ourselves into thinking that we have already arrived. Our social media feeds are just littered with all these people, and all of us do it, putting time and energy into making sure that they look like they have a perfect life. It's like a shop front window into what seems like a perfect life, but really, it's not. Maybe we cover up our weaknesses because we don't think that our weaknesses have any positive thing to offer in our lives, that they're just simply a liability that needs to just be covered up and shunned. So we're at the end of this letter of 2 Corinthians, and what I love about what Paul's doing here, and he's really been doing this the entire epistle, but especially here, he's not pretending anything. He's not pretending a single thing. He's not claiming to have it all together. In fact, it's the opposite. He's boasting about his weaknesses. He's revealing it all for everybody to see, prying open the vaults of his heart and pouring it all out, because he's had a horrible old time with the Corinthians for years and years and years. We've talked about that in the last couple of weeks. And now, it is now or never for Paul and the Corinthians. So he's just unleashing the reality of what it means to be Paul. He's putting Jesus before any desire that he might have to convey that he's a someone. And the thing is, nobody did this in Corinth. Nobody revealed their weaknesses, certainly didn't boast about their weaknesses, and nobody does it today in our society. We very rarely do it in church either. So Paul chooses to boast about his weaknesses. One of the main reasons he was doing that is because there was a group or sect that had come into the Corinthian church who called themselves the super apostles. Seriously, that's what they called themselves. It was a small but very outspoken group. They had infiltrated the church, and their one agenda was to be seen as powerful, to show that they were God's gift to mankind, and that they had reached absolute the pinnacle of perfection. They didn't believe that they needed the resurrection from the dead, that they had already been glorified. And they'd kind of been like working in the midst of the Corinthian church. Even when Paul was writing his first letter to them, he just didn't name them. But now he names them. He's got his eyes set firmly on them. He's targeting them. He writes about them in chapter 11. I do not think I am in the least inferior to those super apostles. I may indeed be untrained as a speaker, which is what they've been saying about it, but I have knowledge. We have made this perfectly clear to you in every way. And then a little later he says, for such people are false apostles, deceitful workers, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It's not surprising then if his servants also masquerade as servants of righteousness. Their end will be what their actions deserve. So they've been calling him shameful. They've been calling Paul shameful because of his weaknesses, because of his suffering. But now Paul's saying to them, they are fakes. They are masquerading. They're pretending to be righteous. They're pretending to be apostles of Christ. But they're putting up a front, a facade. It's like they purposely come into the church to build up this false image of themselves in order to be seen as though there is someone. And Paul goes, well, that's actually pretty similar to Satan. That's what Satan does. He's the king of deception. He sits on the throne of lies. He will wrap himself up and disguise himself in all kinds of things to draw us in and get us. So he's saying these guys are pretty much equal to Satan's servants. So his sights are firmly set in the super apostles as he begins to boast about his weakness, because he wants to end their influence in the church by showing the Corinthians something real. He loves them. He's trying to help them. He wants to show them that the life of a servant of Christ, the life of a Christian, is not about pretending to be somebody you're not. It's about reality. It's about being vulnerable. It's about revealing the extent of your weakness in life to one another. I'm wondering, what weaknesses do you have this morning? Or are you all good? I wonder, what you put up on Facebook or Instagram, does that correlate to what's going on behind closed doors in your life? Do what you say politely to people in conversation about yourself, does that correlate to what's going on in the depths of your heart? It's an important question to ask, because so many prominent people, so many prominent Christians, and I'm not judging Bill Hybels or anything like that, just as an example, they've tried so hard to present an image of themselves for so long, yet it comes out years later that, wow, what a surprise, they were human. They had weaknesses. But wouldn't it have been so much better for them to be open and vulnerable about those things and save all the carnage? Being a Christian is about being real. It's what Paul's trying to get across. Sometimes my daughter Audrey, she puts this Elsa mask on. Elsa's a character from the movie Frozen, in case you didn't know. And when she puts the Elsa mask on, she just gets absorbed in the character, like you wouldn't believe. And, you know, you kind of play along with it. You play along with it. But then sometimes she thinks, because you've been playing along with the character play, she thinks that you've forgotten who she really is. So she takes the mask off and goes, "Daddy, it's me, Audrey." And I'm like, "Yeah, I know it's you. I know it's you, darling. I know it's you." But we do the same thing, don't we? We put on masks. We try to hide who we really are from others. We try to convince others and try to convince God that we're somebody else entirely. But there's no fooling God. He knows who we are, really. He knows who we are. We can put our masks on as much as we want. We might be doing that here this morning, the mask of happiness, of contentment, of toughness. But there's no fooling God. So what Paul's doing here in chapter 11, he's taken off his mask. He's giving everybody an all access pass into the back stage of his life, what it means to be Paul really. And he rattles off this long list of all the times he's suffered weakness. And they're very specific things, very specific incidents. He's talking about being stoned. I was stoned. I was exposed to death. I was lashed. I was beaten. I was shipwrecked 3 times, starved. I was locked up. And to the Corinthians, Paul's beginning to look like a fool as he does this. This is at great risk to his reputation. But he doesn't care. He's opening up himself. He's taken off the mask. And then he talks about Damascus. Now, when the Apostle Paul talked about Damascus, it was pretty obvious what he was going to talk about. His conversion experience on the road to Damascus, right? His radical 360 conversion when Jesus confronted him. So that's what the Corinthians would have thought, because that was what made Paul famous. But he doesn't go there. He chooses to go talk about another story about Damascus, a less beautifying story, where in order to escape the king of Damascus, his mates lowered him out of a window in this like fish basket and lowered him down to the ground. It almost seemed like a bit of a cowardly thing to do. It was not something that you would want to highlight. It's something you would want to gloss over. But Paul's making a point to bare his soul. And as the Corinthians would have been hearing this read out, the list of his weaknesses, the story of Damascus, it would have been a bit awkward. It was getting awkward. They would have been like, is Paul going to continue to do this? And the super apostles were probably going, yeah, well, we told you he's an idiot. We told you he was a fool. He's just proving it. But he doesn't stop. He keeps going. He eventually gets to one of the most vulnerable and soul-bearing parts of the New Testament. First of all, the super apostles, in their deception, had claimed to have received these appearances from Jesus and revelations from Jesus himself. But Paul knew Jesus, and he knew that Jesus couldn't possibly be appearing to these guys and urging them on and affirming what they've been doing. So they're lying. They're lying. Everything they say is a lie. They're performing an act. They've got masks on. And in the ancient world, in order to reveal yourself as a prominent leader, it was normal for you to report on having had these spiritual experiences or revelations from a god. So that's what the super apostles would have been doing, trying to authenticate their leadership. But they're doing it by lying and being false. So what does Paul do? He reveals what it looks like to have actually had a real experience like this. He says at the beginning of chapter 12, I must go on boasting, although there's nothing to be gained. I'll go on to visions and revelations from the Lord. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Whether it was in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know that this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, but God knows, was caught up to paradise and heard inexpressible things, things that no one is permitted to tell. I will boast about a man like that, but I will not boast about myself except about my weaknesses. Even if I should boast, I would not be a fool because I would be speaking the truth. But I refrain, so no one will think more of me than what is warranted by what I do or say, or because of these surpassingly great revelations. He's pretty much saying, unlike the super apostles, Paul has been privy to some of the most incredible revelations of God, of the majesty of heaven that you could ever comprehend. But he's removing himself from the story. He's talking about himself in the third person, in order to not fall into the super apostles' trap of puffing himself up. And he could have told them about this vision already. It happened 14 years ago, but he chose not to, because to Paul, it's not the most important thing. He would rather reveal to them about being shipwrecked and being stoned and beaten than reveal to them about this incredible glimpse into the majesty of heaven that he had. Because Paul's not trying to be somebody that he's not. He's not trying to puff himself up. He's content in his identity in Christ. And his desire is to show Jesus off, no matter what. So he moves on quickly from this, and he gets to his most vulnerable and intimate secret that he's going to share with the Corinthians. He writes, "Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan, to torment me. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.'" So this is like the lowest of the low, the absolute depths of Paul's soul. That's what he's talking about here. He's decided to just air it all. He describes some part of his life that acts like a continual thorn stuck in his side that Satan is using to literally beat him, to pummel him. And it's not something he wanted. He's pleaded with God to take it away three times. "Take it away, Lord. It's limiting my ability to be fruitful." Jesus says, "Nah. No, no." Let's think about this metaphor of the thorn that Paul uses. A thorn is a small thing, but it causes a lot of pain. It's the kind of thing that you just want to leave you, but it won't. Scholars have debated about what Paul's thorn could have been. They think it could have been bad eyesight, could have been a repercussion of his persecution. He could have had bad posture. It could have just been some sort of physical ailment. Nobody's come to a conclusion. That's because I don't think we were meant to know in the first place. Because each one of us, I think, can relate to having something like this. And maybe it was left nameless so that we could better kind of connect to it. I wonder, maybe you know what it is for you. Because Satan knows how to prey on our weaknesses. Maybe there's a battle raging in your mind today. It might be an inclination towards some sort of sin that just keeps you going in cycles, round and around. It might be some sort of physical condition or mental condition that seems to just limit what you can do all the time. Might be something that you feel as though Satan is using to beat you, to just pummel you over and over again. And you might get to the point of going, "It's just all too hard." That's where Satan's trying to get you, to the point of saying, "It's all too hard. I just want to give up." It could be any of these things for you. But I'm going to take a guess here and say most of the time you try to cover that up. You try to keep everything portrayed as fine. And perhaps you might be petrified about what will happen if you're actually vulnerable about that. You're petrified about what might happen if you let up, open your guard and say, yep, I'm weak. I'm struggling with this thing that just is beating my soul to smithereens. Maybe you're completely unwilling to reveal what that thorn would be today for you. Because that's what we do. We're just not real with one another. We just don't want to open up ourselves and show off our weaknesses. We just want to hide behind our screens. All day, every day. Keep our perfect little lives. Meanwhile, we've got these thorns. But Paul wasn't hiding anything. He wasn't hiding behind anything. And it would be such a crazy thing for Paul to have revealed this to them, to the Corinthians. Why did he do it? Why did Jesus say no? And Paul pleaded with them to take it from him. And it's killing him. It's limiting him. But Jesus says no. Why? Because in this case, Jesus was the one who put the thorn there. What's going on with that? Is Jesus got some sort of like cosmic deal with Satan or something? I think the answer is in Jesus' response to Paul. Jesus says, no, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. My power is made perfect in weakness. In our weakness, in the weakness that we try so hard to pretend like we don't have, that is where Jesus' power, the power of the Lord of the universe, is revealed most potently, most strongly in our lives. It's where it's made complete. In the Middle Ages, there was a town called Eisenheim in France, and the poor town was afflicted by this plague. And a lot of the inhabitants suffered because of that. They had like lumps on their arms, all over their bodies. And a lot of them were left out on the street to die because nobody wanted to get near them. But there was one monastery in the town who opened up the doors to give these plague victims comfort and refuge and care. So they were coming into the main sanctuary in the monastery through the droves, just coming in. And a famous artist called Matthias Grunewald, he heard about this. And what the monastery was doing inspired him to create this huge work of art. It's called the Eisenheim Altarpiece. That's it on the screen. And he painted this piece to be placed in the church, in the monastery, for the plague victims. Now, if you go to the next slide, which is a close-up, the way he painted Jesus was he just wanted to show the utmost agony that Jesus went through on the cross. He's not sugarcoating anything there. And what he did was he painted these lumps all over Jesus' body, which were identical to the lumps that the plague victims had on their body. And then the figure of John the Baptist there, who's pointing, he was there to point the plague victims to Jesus as they filed in the doors, as if he's saying, look at your Messiah. Does he look powerful? He's weak. He was a man of sorrows like you. He was familiar with suffering like you. But in the midst of his weakness, the most incredible power that the world has ever seen was unleashed. the salvation of the entire world. The power of the gospel was there in the midst of Jesus' weakness. Now, Paul is just imitating Jesus when he's revealing his weaknesses to the Corinthians. That's what he's doing. There's power in weakness. And I reckon Paul probably saw himself as that John the Baptist character, just pointing to Jesus. I mean, this is your Messiah. He was weak, Corinthians. He's not like the super apostles. He didn't have it all together. He was weak in that moment. He suffered. And that's what we are called to do. So why would we hide our weaknesses? It glorifies God. In the battle through our thorns, whether God put them there or not, we rely on God's grace to get us through in ways that we wouldn't know if we didn't have the weaknesses that we had. Just think about all the host of people who God used in history who had thorns, who had weaknesses, but God filled up where they lacked. His grace was upon them. His power was upon them. Moses couldn't speak a word without stuttering. Yet God used him to get the entire nation of Israel out of Egypt, to save them, take them to the promised land. Gideon was scared. He was a coward. Yet God used him. God filled up where he lacked and gave him courage so Gideon could rely on God and routed an entire army. David suffered with lust. Esther was held back in her context by her gender. That didn't stop her. God came upon her and used her mightily. Jeremiah and Elijah were depressed. John the Baptist was unsure about Jesus. Peter was a hothead. Thomas was a skeptic. The list goes on and on, on and on and on. The first sermon I ever heard preached here in this building was from Omar, Joe Andy. And I'd come in and I was suffering from chronic anxiety. And I was housebound, just had a complete hold on me. But I went up for prayer at the end of Omar's sermon, which I think was about God's power to break strongholds that the devil might have placed in your life. And he prayed for me and he said, he quoted these words, Jesus is saying, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness. And that was an important moment for me. And I knew that then perhaps my anxiety and every other thorn that I have is there to keep me relying on God's grace. I've had battles with lust since I was 13 years old. And I would love for those things to be gone, to just be to end. And I keep seeking holiness and relying on God's Spirit. And I know who I am. I know I'm a child of God. But still, they might be there because God's teaching me about his power in the midst of weakness. In all of this, Paul's trying to say, just don't cover up your weakness. Don't buy into the culture that just says you got to have beauty and status. You got to have it all together. Don't buy into it. We're meant to be absolutely alternatively radical to that and stand against the flow of it. When people come in here, this is meant to be a room full of people who are okay with confessing their sin to one another, who don't think it's going to hurt what that other person might think about them. It should be a room of people who are on their knees and okay to be weak before God and not putting on a mask before God. That's what this church should look like. It's what the church should look like. So let's not try to cover up and hide away from being real. The path of a servant of Christ is transparency. And that's where God's power is realized most potently. That's why Paul says, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That's why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. I wonder, can we be real in these moments this morning? Can we be real together? As a band comes up, we're going to sing that song again, Broken Vessels, Amazing Grace. Because that's what we are. We're fragile, broken vessels of God's power in us. But it's important that we don't pretend to be not that. So as we play this song, as we sing together, I wonder, I don't think it's a coincidence that there's so much room down here at the front of the stage. I think this was meant for us this morning. As God prompts you through his Spirit, if you're weak, sometimes it is a good thing to do to move physically, to present to God and to others that you are open. You are open and you are okay with your weaknesses. So I'm going to come down here. I'm going to kneel. I would love somebody to come and pray for me, and I will pray for that person. We can confess our sin together. Let's just come down, take off our masks before God and before others, and just say, God, I'm sorry. You know I'm struggling with this. You know I've got this thorn. You know I've got this cyclical sin that just keeps binding me. You know I've got this physical ailment. You know I've got this bad way of thinking, and I'm stuck in it. But God, I just want to be real before you, and I want your power to rest on me. I want your power to rest on me, God.